Mother, Mother Ocean, I have heard you call. Wanted to sail upon your waters since I was 3 feet tall.
And it's Jimmy Buffett with Pirate Looks at 40.
50.
It is for, is it a Pirate Looks at 50?
It is.
Okay. This says it's Pirate Looks at 40, the song.
Hi. But it's possible I made a mistake.
It's four. Well, you didn't make a mistake for you, at least. 4:33 here at WCHL. Aaron Keck with you on the afternoon news. And we are joined, as always, by Jeff Danner of the Common Science blog on our website, chapelboro.com. You know, ordinarily we've got this She Blinded Me with Science Sounder, but we're playing Jimmy Buffett today because your column this week is An Engineer Looks at 50.
Yeah, so yesterday was my 50th birthday. Thank you,
congratulations.
Aaron. And just thinking of the news segment that was right before this, it was also Michelle Obama's birthday.
Yes.
But she's 2 years older than
I am. She's 2 years older, yeah. So you've got a long way to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so about once a year, I use the column space to write something. It's usually a blend of something personal, but it still has the sort of the flavor of my experience of being an engineer. And so this is sort of An Engineer Looks at 50. And I thought to myself as I was writing this, whenever I do steer clear of writing about some particular science topic, like last week we talked about batteries and capacitors.
Right.
I think to myself, well, you know, how self-indulgent is this that I'm going to write this column? And rightly or wrongly, I hold on to the thought and also the feedback I get from people. There are a lot of young students out there that are sort of interested in engineering. Maybe they did well in math and somebody told them maybe they should do engineering, but they're not really quite sure what it is.
Right.
And or they have this picture of the, you know, this sort of the Are You a Nerd poster.
Yeah, yeah.
The pocket protector and the calculator. And so
well, nerds rule the world these days. I think hopefully we're past that a little bit.
We do, but I'm not sure if we are. And so, I hope that these columns I write about myself and about my experience as an engineer make it a little more human. And I do get, mm-hmm. I get email from some people, often young students and often young women, because I'm also really suggesting that, you know, women often tend to feel like this is unfamiliar territory,
right.
And don't enroll in engineering schools. And, you know, those who do very well. So mm-hmm. if you're a young woman and you're considering engineering, read about my first 50 years and give it a shot.
Yep,
so,
yep.
But so I decided, well, okay, let me just reflect on these
50 years,
this last half a century.
Okay.
And how, you know, how has my life been impacted by my being an engineer? And,
mm-hmm.
and as you read in the column, and, you know, I say up front, it's a bit of a spoiler. It's been a pretty
good
life.
Good.
I'm a happy man.
Yeah.
But as I think, well, how did I get here? What, you know, how did Jeff Danner become 50 years old, and who is this guy? And I mean, there are many ways to answer that, but as I wrote the column and thought through, I'd say my being an engineer, and I say being an engineer because it's both by profession and predilection.
Yeah.
You know, you have these temperament characteristics.
Yeah.
And so I thought, you know, let me list what those are. So we'll play a sort of a game I'm going to call you just might be an engineer if.
Okay.
All right.
And was that playing the wrong clip of the guy with the sort of vague Southern accent? Should I have broken out the Foxworthy for this?
Perhaps. Yeah, so if you're the sort of person that, you know, you like to break down complex problems into their individual parts, you are an introvert.
Yes.
Which is important in a lot of professions. I mean, if you're going to be an engineer, you have to sort of puzzle through difficult mm-hmm. problems, often alone.
You know,
it's also helpful if you want to be a poet or a writer or a musician or a variety of other
things. Yep.
If you understand how things work by taking them apart.
Yes.
And I try to be very specific about that because I fix lots of things at my house and people know to call me. My friends say, hey, can you come over? My dryer's not working. My water heater broke. But then there are other people who don't know me very well and they'll call me up and say, hey, my furnace isn't working. What should I do? And I say, well, I have to come over and look at it and kind of start to piece it apart.
Yeah.
It's more of a skill of looking how things work.
You actually
work.
Have to see the furnace in order to understand. Who calls you that doesn't know you very well and asks you to come over and fix their furnace?
My reputation precedes me, I guess. or they want me to tell them the answer.
I heard you on the radio 2 weeks ago, and I thought you were the guy.
Yeah. Oh, a couple I know called me a few months ago. They need their garbage disposal wasn't working. I fixed it in about 4 seconds, but they still gave me 2 bottles of wine. So at least, you know, there's my price if you're listening out
there. That's your hourly rate. And math that out a little bit.
And I think, you know, one of the other key characteristics of engineering, and I took a personality test early on about whether you are sort of thinking of new things all the time, or if you see things that exist and you try to make them better.
Right.
Right. And so if you're always thinking of new things, maybe you should go into research and be a scientist and win the Nobel Prize. But if you're looking at things and always trying to make them better and better and better and better, well, then, you know, then you're an engineer.
Yeah. And the Myers-Briggs test, and it came out ENGI, so I...
I'm ENTJ for all of you Myers-Briggs geeks out there. And see, ENTJ is a ENTJ, very common engineering
result. What am I? I think I'm an IN, and then INTP, but it kind of depends on when, which day I'm taking the test. I'm an IN for sure.
And so I grew up with those characteristics. So I think I was sort of, you know, destined to be an engineer. But when I went to college, I did have to pick. I was either going to study engineering or history.
Okay.
And like a good practical engineer, I thought, well, to learn engineering, it takes, you know, laboratory equipment and you know, specialized space and things. And so you can't really teach yourself engineering, or at least in some sense.
That's fair.
And it's certainly helpful to have a professor to learn history, but you can do that as a little bit more of a self-study. So that's been my approach for a long time. Okay. And you have to talk to me every week, but people have read my columns. I mean, how many of my columns have touched on that intersection?
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, I think, you know, as I have children myself, I think about how you are the person you are from very early on.
Oh yeah.
And
you
know, I had those two characteristics. And I think,
what was the book you wrote the three column piece on last fall about the guy who had to hike his way across the Arctic? What book was that?
Oh yeah, it's it was about the first guy to try to I can't believe I've given three people this book.
Yeah.
It's going to occur to me in a minute.
But that was the first thing that I thought of when you said intersection of engineering and history. I'm like, that's what this column is all about. Yeah. So often.
And
yeah.
So I thought, well, okay, but so then that put me on my path, and I was an engineer, and I think, well, what, you know, why is it, you know, things have worked out for me? And there are a couple of things that come to mind. And I mean, money can't buy everything, but it's certainly a useful crutch in a variety of circumstances. And I've been an engineer for 2.5 decades, and as I talk to friends of mine, you know, in different careers, some make more money, some less, but an engineering job is almost always a corporate America job, and I've had sort of the Dilbert life. I started in a cubicle. After enough passage of time, I have an office with a door.
Right, right.
But every week,
you start out wearing a tie, and then you've transitioned into a more casual.
In fact, my first job at Arco Chemical back in 1993, I had to wear a suit and tie every day.
Nice.
I mean, no jacket and unmatching pants, except for maybe on Fridays. And so I have transitioned a long way. Although at my workplace right now, you're allowed to wear jeans and golf shirts and things on Fridays.
Okay.
And
that's good.
I haven't been able to get myself into that mindset. I had a coworker tell me not long ago that she's known me for 10 years and she's not entirely certain that she's ever seen my arms.
I don't know what you... Have I seen you in jeans? I don't know. I feel like...
We've run into each other at the festival with the Eno. And,
I was going to say.
Yeah, I can let my hair down as it were.
I think you're required to at the festival of the Eno.
So, I mean, that's on the one hand, but there are, engineering jobs pay well, and that's a sort of well-known. We've talked about that. But then I think the engineering characteristics that I have and many engineers do have allowed me to be a good steward of those paychecks.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that struck me as I was working on this is I like a good engineer, a good organized person. I do our family budget at the end of the month.
Right.
And it's on a spreadsheet that I designed myself, and I've never missed. I do it every time. And
one would say you excel at it?
Perhaps. Yes, it is an Excel file, although it wasn't, which is interesting. So I've done that every month for 298 months in a row.
Wow.
So that's over 24 years.
That's pretty good.
And, you know, you and I talked not long ago. One of the things I think has been fun about being sort of in the science and academic and engineering world for these last couple of decades is I've been on the forefront of the PC revolution. And so that very first version, remember, I wrote a column about a year ago called My First PC Weighed 25 Pounds.
Yes, yeah.
And it looked like this enormous suitcase, and it had the 5.5-inch floppy disks.
Right, right.
And that's the computer I used to start the spreadsheet that I'm still using now.
Nice.
And it was there wasn't Excel back then. You bought it. It was called Lotus 1-2-3.
Right.
It was the first popular. And so in the late 80s, I started this.
Awesome.
And all of the parameters are graphed. And so I can use that to do data analysis and hopefully make good decisions about mm-hmm. how our family stewards our monies. But mm-hmm. then I also look at it and I think perhaps with an appreciation you could only have as an engineer, I look at the graphs of our income and debts and spending. And it tells a history of our family. It starts a couple of years before I'm married.
Right.
And then you can see in these graphs that, you know, early on my wife and I had no money. We were both in graduate school and we were just maybe starting to get a little bit of savings. But then, you know, something would happen like, you know, we need new brakes for the car or
yep.
something. We'd
yep.
go down to zero again. And then you can see when my daughter's born and then you can see when we buy the first house. And
yeah.
So, it's
a good life graph, basically.
I've been reminiscing like an engineer over the weekend looking at these things as I put this together.
Okay, so financial advice from an engineer's perspective for people who are not engineers and therefore do not have the complicated spreadsheet with the 26-year history. What is the thing that you think of first when you think about proper stewardship of finances?
So I think a lot of budgeting, people try to go on a go-forward basis, which is tough.
Mm-hmm.
I look at the last month and I look at trends.
Okay.
Right? And so if you realize, hey, wait a minute, you know, I'm only making X amount of dollars, but 40% of this is going to this expensive phone plan I have.
And, mm-hmm.
Or you can look at things change over time. You know, I mean, in our case, as our family keeps growing in number, the food budget goes up. And to me, you can see those trends and you can make corrective action.
Okay.
The other thing about finances as an engineer, which I mentioned in this column as well, is I always include safety margins.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have to do it in an engineering. If you're calculating a relief valve on a reactor, you calculate it needs to be 8 inches in diameter to be safe. So you make it 12 inches in
right.
diameter. And if I'm going to drive, okay, here. we've been doing this radio spot for almost 3 years
yes.
now. Have I ever been late?
Off the top of my head, I can't think so, but I'll say no.
I think the answer is no.
Okay.
I think the answer is no. There, and I, you know, it takes me about 20 minutes to get here.
Oh, so your budget.
And I leave about 35
right,
minutes ahead
right.
of time.
Yep.
Well, I think that's the same thing with your finances. You know, if I say, okay, I need to have a safety fund of, you know, $1,000 just to make sure that, again, when those unexpected things happen, like the heater breaks in
right.
the house, you know, that I'm going to keep going until I've got $2,500. And I think those kind of safety margins are...
Yeah. So something can come up and you're okay because you've got that extra leeway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So then I went sort of on the health front, which I think is that there's a similar to the finances front. And on the health front, again, engineering, there are many jobs that are in corporate America, but most engineering jobs are in corporate America. So I've always had, and my family has always had, health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I can get preventative care and I can go to the doctor when I feel sick. And as I wrote in the column, you know, I said it was my birthday, so I went a little extra indulgence for a political statement. But it just always strikes me that this is a little Bernie Sanders-esque for the week, that the practice we have of tying people's health insurance to their job, it's just a terrible
yes.
system. And
yes.
no one else in the developed world does it that way.
Yeah.
And I've unexpectedly lost my job at one point and mm-hmm. was, you know, had my health insurance imperiled.
Yeah. And COBRA is amazing if you've got all the money to drop on the great health insurance
yeah.
that is now costing you out of pocket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just think that's been something that's kept me healthy. But I also, as I talk about in the column, I think if you start to understand the molecular makeup of food and the mechanisms of how the body works,
mm-hmm.
I feel like I've been less, I don't know, I don't hear the siren call of this quick fix diet or this crazy trend.
The just diet sort of pills and
yeah.
eat all you want of broccoli and you're good to go.
It's just sort of the slow, steady, slog it out
yep.
engineering style. And
yep.
so I think, you know, I see an overlay in those characteristics that I don't know, I must have been born with, that have sort of served me these last 50 and hopefully for the next 50.
So engineering makes you healthy, wealthy, and wise.
Healthy, wealthy, and wise.
As Ben Franklin would say. We're speaking with Jeff Danner, Common Science blog on our website, chapelboro.com. We have to end the column with regrets because that's how you ended it.
No, I did. So I asked myself, do I have any regrets? And then we get a little less engineering and more personal here.
Yeah.
But I thought to myself, there really aren't very many. We talked about one in another column. I played guitar as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I quit.
Yeah.
And then I picked it up again about three
you
or four years ago.
You brought the guitar in and you were pretty good.
And I played on the radio, personal courage. And,
yeah.
And it's because I had a teacher who taught me the math.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my sort of engineering overlay there. I regret, in a sense, I did have a great career, but I could have taken an academic career and been a chemical engineering professor at Bucknell back in 1993 instead of going to ARCO Chemical. And I think about that often. Like, it's like one of those movies
like what might have been past.
Yeah, yeah. One of those movies where, you know, you can either go this way or that way.
Yep.
And in life, you only get to do it once. But, you know, I'm 50 now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and by the time I'm 60, you know, my kids will be through college. And, I could look at maybe some changes in how I calibrate my career. So that's still
a
possibility.
Right. There's moments in your life where you know that if I make this decision, I'm going to go down this path. If I make this decision, I'm going to go down this path. I've noticed too that there are those moments that are like that, where you make a decision and your life takes a trajectory that you that was wildly different from what it would have if you'd make the other decision, and you don't realize that you're making that decision at the time.
Yeah.
Like
I think
decisions
in this case,
that have repercussions and consequences that are just unforeseen.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by those.
In this case, I feel like I kind of knew it.
I knew it was a big
momentous choice. And again, things have worked out fine, but I may still have a chance to jump over that path. And the last one, and I wanted since I was a kid to hike the Appalachian Trail.
Mm-hmm.
And there are
from start to finish.
Start
like
to finish.
Is it Georgia and goes up
to? It's Georgia to Maine.
Yeah.
It takes about 5 months. Now,
yeah.
I wouldn't mind doing it in segments because
mm-hmm.
it can be hard to carve out 5 months. But some people do it that way, mm-hmm. you know, 2 months this year, 3 months the following.
Right.
And when you're in college and graduate school, and those you have some more flexibility. I've been kind of busy the last couple of decades. But
mm-hmm.
again, as I think about the good sort of long-haul engineering approach, I'm hopeful that 10 or so years from now, I'll have a little more flexibility in my schedule,
yeah.
and I'll be and healthy,
be,
wealthy, and wise enough to
be
out there and do it.
Flexible as well, and be able to get out there.
People do it in their 70s
yeah,
and 80s.
That's true.
And so the nice part was that's a very short list of regrets.
Yeah, including one or two that are not regrets, is sort of just like to-do list items that you
could
just
be.
Haven't
maybe
knocked
that's,
off
Maybe
yet.
That's my bucket list
there
more than
go.
My regret list.
Yeah, I like it.
And then I just think, you know, as I look at the next 50 years, I'll still be me that whole time. So I just closed out the column. I intend to live to 100. So
yes,
I've announced that live here on air. And so, you know, that just I know that if I'm successful in that, it'll be 2066, and I'll be filling out my 898th consecutive monthly budget spreadsheet.
Because you'll still be doing the spreadsheet.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. All right. Common Science is the blog. You can check out the engineer looks at 50 right now. It's on the homepage, chapelboro.com. You can go back and scroll through years of archives. A lot of great columns, engineering and history together, as always. Jeff Danner, thank you so much, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Aaron.